Morning, everyone. Welcome to Senate Finance. It's Thursday, March 6th, and it's 9:05. Welcome to the table, Senator Taylor, Senator Bundy, Co-Chair Green, myself, Senator Wilkin. Purpose of today's meeting is to hear Senate Bill 25, Senate Bill 43, House Bill 71. We have a meeting at 10, so we'll try to be out of here promptly at 10 o'clock, if not before. Any cell phones or pagers, we'd appreciate it if you'd turn those off. And Senator Green, anything to add to the agenda before we begin? Let's begin then with the Senate Bill 25. Peterson is at the table, and I recognize this morning Mr. Kapansky is at Alaska Housing with us in Anchorage. Thank you all for joining us this morning. You're there for questions, and we'll recognize you shortly. Sheila, if you would please to present the Senate Bill 25. It establishes within Alaska Housing Finance Corporation a housing program for teachers, counselors, and administrators. This new loan program will permit a qualified applicant to purchase an owner-occupied home without paying a conventional down payment. And after Sheila reads the sponsor statement, I have a committee substitute that I'd like to propose for the committee. So with that, Sheila.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Sheila Peterson, staff to Gary Wilkin. Senate Bill 25 is about recruiting and retaining the best teachers possible for our students. This legislation establishes a housing program within Alaska Housing Finance Corporation for teachers, counselors, and administrators who are required to be certificated. The new teachers housing loan offered through Alaska Housing permits a qualified applicant to purchase an owner-occupied home without paying a conventional down payment. This legislation will provide Alaska school districts with a tool to attract and keep qualified public school teachers. The recruitment and retention of a qualified workforce is paramount to the operation of a successful K-12 education program. Unfortunately, though, many school districts are experiencing a shortage of experienced, talented teachers and spend thousands of dollars to recruit the necessary educators. The proposed new housing loan program provides an incentive for trained teachers, counselors, and administrators to enter into the profession and settle into the local communities. This legislation addresses one of the concerns highlighted in the October 2001 committee report on statewide teacher shortage by the House Special Committee on Education. As indicated in this report, the high cost of purchasing a home, or in some areas of the state, the lack of available teacher housing is a frequent reason for teachers to leave the profession. Senate Bill 25 recognizes this concern and helps facilitate educators to obtain the necessary financing to purchase a home by eliminating the requirement for down payment. Senate Bill 25 makes a small but positive step towards ensuring Alaska school districts have the best stable workforce possible.
Thank you, Sheila. I have a committee substitute. Before I discuss that, I'd like to recognize Senator Stevens and Senator Olson. Senator Taylor.
Move that we adopt committee substitute Cook 303 in the Q version.
Senator Taylor, objection to adoption of version Q of committee substitute 25, Senate Bill 25. I will, with the committee's indulgence, explain the changes. Two changes primarily coming out of the discussion at the HES committee. I refer you to page 2, line 1. This allows this program to be taken advantage of by a teacher, administrator, or certificated person only once. They won't be able to come back and avail themselves of it a second time. The second part of it is suggested that we take a look at this 5 years from now to see if indeed the program is working the way it should. And so if you look at line 7 and line 9, they together put in what amounts to a 5-year sunset on this program. The Alaska Housing, who by the way are here today if we have any questions, Dan and Brian are with us. If we have questions, we can certainly ask them. That's the differences in the committee substitute as adopted version 2. Why don't you just, Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I have an Eddie?
walk you through the packet that's in your packet, if I could. In this packet, you have a white paper that was published November 27th of 2002 by Alaska Housing Finance that speaks to the difficulties that are addressed in this legislation. Moving on ahead, you'll see an article by then-Representative, now Senator Bundy, talking about teacher shortages, and that's entitled Looking for Answers to Shortage, and that was published in October of 2001 in the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. In the same year, the Anchorage School District passed a resolution in support of providing housing subsidies for teachers. In the year 2000, the Alaska Statewide Educator Supply and Demand Report highlighted the lack of housing for particularly rural teachers. There's an article, a periodical, No Dream Denied, published by the National Commission on Teaching in America's Future. It talks about teacher retention and housing issues there, created by the lack of housing and ability to retain teachers. And then the last two pages are interesting articles about what other states are doing, and you can see that in California they're offering $10,000 to $30,000 bonuses to get teachers into their state. Texas, $2,000 signing bonuses. Georgia and Mississippi paying up to $6,000 signing bonuses. And then in Santa Fe, New Mexico, they have a program, if I remember right, that awards $10,000 to $15,000 to teachers to help pay for their down. So not only is the teacher shortage, the teacher pool shrinking, but also the competition for those good teachers is being becoming more intense across the nation. So this bill simply helps get Alaska's oar in the water to help not only recruit but retain teachers across our state. So with that, any questions? That we'll start with Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and as you pointed out, the housing problem is a challenge. I have a couple of comments and a couple of questions I might make. With your permission, you've mentioned the signing bonuses. Unfortunately, it turns out that they haven't done much good because as soon as they finish their eligibility for the bonus, they're moving on and getting bonuses elsewhere. Teachers, being not the dumbest kids on the block, know how blind they work. So my question to you, sponsor, is if someone purchased a home and it is, housing is a challenge, there isn't a lot of it, and then the unfortunate current trend continues after about 3 years, usually just before they're allowed to be granted tenure for many reasons, and the teachers move on, and they own that home. They continue then to be able to own that home, which then, of course, would removed from the market one of the few housing units that are available in the
country. My answer to that is yes, they would, but I would hope that we could ask Alaska Housing Finance to come to the table, and they can certainly help with the details. But as I understand it, Ms. Fowski, would you mind joining us, Brian? I understand that once the mortgage is in place, it's going to be difficult to track whether they retain it over time. But Dan, why don't you handle that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Fowski. I'm the CEO, Executive Director of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Excuse me. I would like to defer. I hope we have Paul. We mentioned Paul Kapansky on
Mr.
the line.
Mr. Kapansky, are you online?
Yes, I am.
And we're going back away from that microphone just a little bit.
If I may, Mr. Chair, we could ask Paul to discuss just for a moment how we track and some of the difficulties that this might impose.
Mr. Kapansky, did you hear Senator Bundy's question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I did. Frankly, once a loan is made, we don't track the occupancy. Our basic concern once a loan is made is that the payments are made. So we would have no way of determining whether a teacher after 3 years or 2 years or whatever the time period it would be elected to move on to another profession and moved out of the home and elected to rent that home. That, just one more time, we have no way of tracking that.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Senator Bundy.
If I might thank you,
And so, worst case scenario, Pete qualified for the loan, Pete can, minimum time necessary to qualify, leave and then become a landlord and rent that home out at a profit on a subsidized loan.
Okay.
Yeah, is that accurate?
Technically, it would not be a subsidized loan. The benefit that they would have is that they were able to get into a program with no down payment. And we have other programs. We have a minimum of a 3% down payment. Others are 5%. So, you know, technically, to the extent of the subsidy, I would not consider that. But you're correct that they could move on, rent it, and, you know,
counter the rental income. Senator Bundy? And that leads me to my next question is that, zero fiscal note, why do other financial institutions require a down payment?
Paul, I can...
I can... Want me to handle that, Dan?
Go ahead, and then I can... Mr. Chairman, I permission.
Mr. Pansky?
Well, there are various programs on residential lending that you can get 100% loan to value. We, as Alaska House of Finance, by state statute, unless it's a federally insured loan, require a minimum of a 5% down payment. Generally, a down payment is considered because if someone has a investment into their property, into their home, that they less likely
could
that they will default on the loan.
And just go back to my earlier question. That appears to me to be a subsidy because there you are increasing the potential for Alaska Housing to sustain a loss on this loan not without requiring a down payment.
We do cover that risk to an extent with mortgage insurance. That in the event that we foreclose on a property, that they will cover a certain portion of the loss.
And there's, I suppose, a cost for that insurance.
Yeah, there is a cost for that insurance, but the cost is borne by the borrower.
Okay.
Mr. Kropowski? Mr. Kropowski?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Paul's pretty much touched on it. Any loans that we have with an 80% loan-to-value or greater ratio require mortgage insurance. So this is, you know, with 100% certainly falls into that. But we currently do a lot of loans for mortgage insurance, which I'll always reply. Once you fall below the 80% loan-to-value, usually your house payment should go down because that is then taken out of your monthly payment, and that's generally done by the servicer of your loan calculation to figure that out.
Senator Olson?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Maybe I could answer the question in a different way because it sounds like from the perspective of the senator from Anchorage, that people that go into housing markets, as they do in the cities, many times look at apartment buildings and houses, duplexes, whatever have you, as a way of investment to go ahead and make a profit so that you do have something at the end of a period of time to show as some type of positive effect on your portfolio. But people that are in the villages, especially in rural areas, do not look at housing as one of those things that you invest in. In fact, the housing market is very difficult to get across because there is no appreciable appreciation to an investment that goes on out there. Going back to his initial statement that most of the time where people do get a loan and they've got to have a down payment, that's a standard business practice. But that's a business practice. When a person makes a house or a teacher comes into a village, many of the housing situations that they find themselves in where they're having to stay in the school because of some shack that's not really acceptable to them or their wives or their family, certainly they want some kind of relief from out there. So because of that, when you look at a regular loan compared to a housing loan, we can live without investments. Most people do. They can't live without a place to stay or some shelter to stay in. And so because of that, and frankly, teachers aren't necessarily business people. Looking at something for a for-profit, from a for-profit perspective, is not what is the foremost in the teacher's mind. Many times, the people that have invested in houses out in rural Alaska, especially teachers, have lost money when they've needed the cash because of a shortage of cash flow and have left the village for one reason or another. So I would say to look at it that the teacher has a subsidized loan is maybe not the most correct viewpoint that I would consider.
Other questions or comments? Senator Taylor.
What is the term on page two, 100, must be equal to 100% of value?
Trabowski?
Does that mean that you can only borrow, if the house and property is $100,000, you can only borrow $100,000?
Trabowski?
Mr. Chairman, I believe what that refers to, the loan must be equal to 100% of the value of the property. In other words, I think that's a reiteration of the statement that you're borrowing the total money for the project with no money down. There's no down payment requirement.
Well, isn't there a better way to phrase that? Because it would seem that the loan must be equal to 100% of the value, and I'm assuming they mean market value by that. Then if you do an appraisal for purposes of the loan of the property, and the house and the property come in at, say, $150,000, the only loan they can have is for $150,000. They may not need $150,000. They may have a down payment. But why would you have them only available at 100%? Maybe they've got a bargain on it. The house is appraised at $150,000, but the person's willing to sell for $100,000.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, I'd like to again defer to Paul. We had a little discussion on this, and we kind of read it to mean that I don't think it prohibited someone from making a down payment, for one. Because we'd certainly encourage that if people wanted to. And
I was thinking there must be words like equity to the value or loan. Like, what does 80% mean? Is that 80% of total value?
Yes.
Okay. Is that how you would... Is there a clearer way to phrase that so that we know that they're not going to be mandated, the only loan they can have is for whatever the property appraises for its total value?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Paul, do you have any suggestions I'd add in on how we might word this? Would you be more common?
The advantage to a teacher is they can get 100% loan to value. We determine value by either the appraisal or the sales price lower than two. Now, they do not have to, in this program, as it is now, provide no other benefit to them. So in this instance, if they elected not to have 100% loan to value, then they wanted to put down a down payment, they could. But for clarity, you could say each housing loan may be equal to 100% of the value of the property. You could change must to may.
Yeah. Yeah, I had just done the same thing in reading through it there. Thank you.
Anything else, Senator Kidd?
I do that at this point as an amendment. Must to may on line four.
Motion's been made on page two, line four, to change the word after housing loan must to may. Objection to that amendment?
Green? Okay, so if it says it may be, does that imply it could be more than 100%? Could the person thus receive a cash benefit up front from a loan in excess of 100%?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Green, it is not practice, we would not be in a position under our underwriting criteria to be giving people cash in excess of what they borrow. That's just not standard lending policy. Now, if we need to strengthen that language, it's inherent in our underwriting criteria. That it's similar when you refi your home. In many cases, you don't get to go in. You can borrow extra money, for instance, to do improvements, but you very, very, you can't go in and get the excess cash, and this would be a similar type situation.
Senator Green?
The comment was made that the person might want to come in with a down payment. If they were coming in with a down payment, why would they use this language?
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, Senator Green, I think what we're trying to point out here is that if someone wants to make a down payment, that they certainly can, because that's the advantage. One, it's good from the risk perspective of the loan, but more importantly, it's good for the borrower, because that would lessen, that would lighten their loan payment if they do have down payment. I don't think they probably won't use this program if they had down payment money. They would possibly look at one of the other programs that Alaska Housing offers. But I made the comment, I think it would prohibit someone from doing a down payment. Maybe that was confusing if it was, I apologize.
Well, I agree with you 100%, but then I want to be sure that the language of the amendment doesn't allow something that's not intended. That's my point, not the amendment.
Mr. Paskin.
Again, Mr. Chair, Paul, any idea what we might say in there to alleviate the senator's concern?
We could look to wording, which I think we have in statute for our other programs. A teacher's housing loan may be made up to 100% of the value of the property.
How about maybe no greater than?
That would work also, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't believe either. The phrase you used was maybe made up to or maybe made no greater than. Right?
What if we did this? See, amendment to the amendment. The teacher's housing loan may be no greater than equal to, maybe no greater than equal to 100% of.
Of what?
Value of the property, which has been defined as either appraisal or sales price, whichever is less. So we would strike must, and will be no greater than 100%. Teacher's housing loan will be no greater than 100%. Dan? Mr. Kapansky?
Yeah.
Teacher's housing loan will be no greater than 100%. So we strike must be equal to and insert will be no greater than. Maybe, all right.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, so that sentence, line four, reads, a teacher's housing loan may be no greater than 100% of the, line five, value of the property for which the loan is made. Everybody clear on the amendment? Senator Green?
I thought we were going to change the word of the value of the property. Did I understand that? And I thought there was confusing about what it meant.
I think we agreed that value as defined was appraisal or sales price, whichever is less. So I think we're clear on the value.
As long as the value. Is that the same thing as what you said?
No.
No. If I may, Mr. Chair, I think we're fine with that language.
Okay.
Again, back to the way the underwriting criteria works and the way that the industry works, I think we're pretty clear now, especially with that adding the point of if we do the no greater than 100%, I think we've covered the issues that were concerned.
Okay. All right, is there, Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Senator. Interest rates on the HFC loans, how would they be done with the flag at one?
My name, Mr. Chair, Senator Bundy. Paul and I talked yesterday, and currently, unless they change this morning, Paul, but the rural loans are right at 5%, tax exempt first time home buyers at 5 3/8, vets are at 5 3/8, taxable is 5.5, and taxable first time home buyer is 5.5. We are generally competitive in the market on the taxable first-time homebuyer and the taxable on the conventional side, and we're generally either at par with Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or Countrywide and some of those large institutions, or within an eighth, and that's where we compete on those interest rates. So it's a very competitive, changes daily at some time, and it, as you are well aware, sir, we're at record lows for this generation, if you will. If I may, Mr. Paul, any change on those rates as we discussed yesterday?
Kevin, I don't need more detail. I think that's my question, and brought on by the notion that someone had a down payment that will go into the private market for you folks, and there's no advantage be going either way regarding this state. With the downfall of the field, the either use or not use it. If I might continue, and let me restate that I'm certainly in favor of anything that's being provided.
Before you do that, could we dispense with the amendment?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Amendment to the amendment? Right. Any objection to the amendment? The amendment that changes the wording on line 4? Seeing none, the amendment passes. And that I've been corrected. That's amendment number 2 to this bill. Now, Senator Bundy,
yeah,
please.
Yeah. As I say, I have a little different view of teachers, perhaps, than Senator Croft from the. I remember when I began teaching in Anchorage. 30-some years ago, the then president of the school board said, if you're going to be teaching, you elect the living can be a father. I found that very offensive, and many of my colleagues did. I found in my 26 years of teaching, teachers to be inventive, creative, and even entrepreneurial. So, and I don't, so my questions aren't intended to be critical of teachers or this program. My questions were simply if there is indeed, if it's true for packages, if there is any subsidies involved, we should be upfront about it. And it appears it's not huge subsidy involved, though I would consider the ability to get into a home without a down payment. In my mind, a subsidy that isn't available to the general public, but folks in the Navy subsidy can assure me that it doesn't have an impact on their bottom line. Not going to reduce the dividend that they get from the state, except that.
Thank you, Senator Bundy, and that was question number 1 for me, so, yeah. Any further discussion? Senator Olson, do you have any amendments?
Actually, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask Mr. Kowalski if I could. First of all, you spoke of some of the percentages there that were dealing with the taxable, the veterans, as well as the rural area, and it sparked in my mind what has been the experience of the teacher housing loan program out in rural Alaska, particularly with the REA.
And Chair, Senator Olson, the original HAF program, the rural program that we amended last year, was originally started, I believe, in the mid-80s, and that was the original intent of that was the teacher housing. And it then expanded into, to be used by all the citizens of the area. Our experience has been difficult to finance. We've been approached in terms of, when you mention REAs or any of the multifamily, we are currently in negotiations with several regions as to how can we structure, more importantly, or deliberately in this case, multifamily dwellings. And that has become difficult, not impossible, but we are trying to figure out ways to afford these projects. The single family, the rural program, goes through spurts where it's quite active. It represents a fairly significant portion of our overall portfolio. I don't know that I can address specifically if it's just for teachers or not. I don't think we've seen a great deal of activity of teachers purchasing homes in more of the tinier areas. You see some of that going on in some of the more, what I like, the Hubs, the Barrows, the Bethels, the Cotsubies, the Gnomes kind of area. Would we like to see the activity increase from a business perspective? Certainly. We want to see a good loan program. It's business for the corporation. And if we can be doing something that helps with the teacher housing issue, then it's kind of a win-win situation for everyone. I hope I answered your question, Senator.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Kowalski, as you looked at this bill here, is there an amendment in order that would make it more streamlined or make it clear that these molten, obviously you can build a duplex in some places, much more efficient to do that than a single home dwelling. And realizing that some of these tiny villages are not going to have the investment from the teachers because, as I pointed out before,
there's really no appreciation in the real estate out in the village of 100 feet.
There, Mr. Chairman, we are looking at options, though. One that I think could be of some benefit if we can receive more federal assistance by assistance, meaning we also administer the Section 8 voucher certificate program for the federal government through the state. And it's a very successful program, and it's a rental assistance program where the federal government has gone away from building large public housing units to public-private partnering in areas across the country where private developers build and then median incomes are established and rent schedules are established. And that would be certainly a program that we are taking out into more areas. We recently opened one in Barrel as a test program, and it's our intention to try and expand that statewide, naturally with the assistance of our federal delegation, especially to get more vouchers. So that's an area that can really help with the development of rental housing. In terms of programs to expand the need, I think this, for those individuals in rural Alaska that are interested in buying, this is certainly a good opportunity if they're in an area where that opportunity exists. The other problem, and I get going on this, is one of, in many areas, there's no inventory. So it becomes difficult, as you know, if there's no true real estate market or a system of exchange.
Senator Olson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Pawlowski. I'd like to go ahead and move amendment number one.
Amendment number one has been moved. I'll object for clarification.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Amendment number one was put forth in a way to go ahead and try and make it clearer as to what the intent of the bill is out for rural Alaska. And what we have here, what we did last year was we allowed a bill to go on through, and I certainly voted for it, in order to try and enhance the retention of teachers, because it's very difficult to be out in any place without an adequate dwelling, an adequate shelter to go back to. And in rural Alaska, this is magnified because you are dealing with less than some of the amenities that many of the people are used to. And what has happened is that in the past, there's been very little participation by the teachers to go and take advantage of the bill in its intent. Part of the reason has to do was there was a lawyer's opinion that came out that made it questionable as to whether some of these school districts or REAs could go ahead and build teacher housing, especially out in some of the villages. And so with that, I have submitted amendment number one for that reason, so it's clear and it can explicitly allow school districts, REAs in particular, to go ahead and get involved with multifamily housing out in some of the smaller areas.
Obviously, that's where I come from.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson. Senator Bundy.
Under discussion in the amendment.
Please.
While I travel rural Alaska some, I certainly don't have the expertise of my colleagues. So I have a hard time imagining why anyone would choose to buy a home in an area where your investment would be too cheap. Counterintuitive, rather than it cost you money to do that. Easier to financially or more advisable to rent. In the original bill, in my reading of it, I don't see anything that limits this program to rural. So certainly Teacher and Fairbanks can access this as well. Which begs another question about should we be competing with the private market in the areas. If indeed it is accurate that homes would likely depreciate, at least in some areas, then it's doubtful that anyone would want to take advantage of this, even at the REAA. It seems like it wouldn't be a fiscally responsible thing to do, purchase something that is going to continue to depreciate. be like some districts buying in.
Senator Olson, on the
amendment. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And my colleague from Anchorage does make a good point that nobody would, in good business sense, invest in something that's depreciating, that's going to depreciate, especially with real estate. And I hope that the understanding is that I did not say that real estate necessarily depreciates out in the small villages. My point was that the lack of appreciation that goes on out there does not escalate or does not have the positive numbers that you do see when you have a real estate investment in a larger community. So it's not that they depreciate, it's more that there is the lack of appreciation in any appreciable manner for the land value or any kind of real estate value of the neutral asset.
Other discussion on the amendment? Senator Stevens?
This is for Senator Olson. I don't know if you can answer this or not, but what's the percentage of teachers in rural Alaska that do live in REA owned housing?
I don't have the exact numbers out there. One of the difficulties is because REAs have not been able to participate in this particular program, there are no buildings that I know of, no housing starts or any type of facility, any kind of housing that's for the teachers that are in rural Alaska that are being taken advantage of by teachers. In most of the villages, they are usually private dwellings that they are renting out. And because of that, many times you'll have, like in the village of Gallo, we have two teachers, not of their own choice initially, that live together. And when you see each other every day, all day long, and then you got to go back to them, and you're having a bad hair day type of thing, the last thing you want to do is, you want to go back to a place that's your own. But because of that, they're forced into this, because they don't have any alternative. I mean, they can move into one of the rooms of the school, which a number of people have done. I think you're just from one of the other school districts that's not in my district came to my office and said, I now live in the school that the old boiler room was at because my wife didn't want to stay out in this particular place because she thought, got tired of being supported, lack of insulation, wisdom. So housing is a very critical issue out there. And it has, on occasion, had teachers they live together because the alternative is worse than not. Otherwise, they'd much rather have a room.
You mean other people been sent to the boiler room, too? I thought that was just my family. Okay, other questions on the amendment? I have two, Senator Olson. But in a way, the nut of this whole bill is the buy-in of a teacher into the community, a buy-in into something that becomes their nest egg. And your amendment is something different. It's a buy-in on what amounts to a governmental entity. But that bothers me a bit. The second thing is, and I think Mr. Fowski can help us with this, I'm envisioning what the revenue stream would be in order to support the mortgage. There would have to be debt of some sort. And let's see, is this multifamily? Is your amendment multifamily?
It should include that, yes.
Okay, so let's just say it's a fourplex in Port Yukon, $500,000. So you would have to support some $500,000 debt based on some revenue stream. And I'm wondering what that revenue stream would be. And I just made a list here of four that I can think of: grants, federal money, state money, or some sort of local contribution of some sort. There may be others. Those are just... And so it bothers me that perhaps this type of a debt would be supported on foundation money. We would want to make sure that wouldn't happen because there's already enough demand for that money as it is. So what do you envision the revenue stream that would support the debt with this amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, first of all, I don't know if you want to answer the first part of the question or your second question first. I'll go with the second question first, which is that normally you do not, in small villages, you do not build a dwelling with, at least most of every place that I've seen, I've never seen a fourplex or something like that out in rural Alaska. If you're going to be you're going to be putting a facility like that up, you're dealing with somebody that has more of a business entrepreneurial spirit to them, where you've got to sink down some pretty deep pilings, especially where you've got permafrost. Most places out there are either a single family dwelling, although most places have got the duplex situation there, because you're not dealing with multi-level, you're dealing with one level, very easy to build, and that's where you've got the revenue, the way to go ahead and pay for that loan that's out there. As long as you don't over flood the market, the place is always good. There will always be features there that need places to stay. I mean, they've got to have a place to stay unless you've got some kind of faltering population within the student body.
So the revenue stream is the expected rental income over the 15 or 30 year life of the mortgage. That would be what would support the debt?
As you would look at with any business.
Is that something, Mr. Fowski, that's seen as collateral? Or could that support that debt?
Mr. Chairman, we certainly would apply normal underwriting criteria to any proposal that came before the corporation, and rental income certainly factors in to the calculations as we refer to it, does this deal pencil or not? And it's key. You also look at the vacancy factors, the vacancy rates, and any kind of rent-up reserves that might be established as part of the loan. But we would calculate, and grants or any other type of revenue that could be dedicated towards the particular loan would be calculated, figured into the transaction.
Before I go, Senator Bundy, so could foundation money be expected to support this debt? Senator Olson?
I'd have to defer to Mr. Fowski to make sure that I can answer the question appropriately.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, we would certainly look at any monies that if an organization came to us and sat down with Mr. Kapansky, for instance, and his staff, and they would start analyzing, okay, sides and overall cost. We would certainly look at if we're looking at a revenue stream that is based on an annual appropriation, for instance, that gets a little bit more difficult, because no one knows how that's going to work from year to year, and it certainly would factor into our calculations on I don't know how they would pledge that. I don't know how the deal would be written up. I think we'd be more inclined to look at just what they had listed as. The other thing you'd have to look at is the rent. In many areas of the state, not many, but some that I've talked to, I believe it was Kotzebue, for instance, they rent to teachers, and they help to secure the rent for the units for teachers, and then they rent to the teachers for 12 months, and they prorate that rent, and then the school district subsidizes a portion of that. And I'm saying this because then that becomes another deliberation, or part of the deliberation of, well, they're only there for 9 months, but you can do the other three, and that certainly would factor in the ability to service. If I may, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Paul if he has any
to add to that.
No, sir, other than that, just like single-family housing, when we underwrite multifamily housing, that it's strictly the repayment generally comes from the revenue of the property, which means basically the rent.
Senator Bundy?
Yeah, certainly for the record, Mr. Chairman, in my view, unless an apartment is part of the school building itself, I cannot imagine that the foundation money is just used for operation and maintenance of that apartment. Whatever. It's a separate building. I can't, in my mind, wouldn't support the foundation money for that. That's what the operation is, but the school, not the housing, not teacher housing. You brought up a topic, though, that is interesting. There will always be some vacancy rate. It would be very low, but there will be some vacancy rate. As mentioned, the vacant during the summer, the payments still have to go on. and in unorganized areas where there isn't a local contribution, there isn't a tax income. How would people then be able to pay for the vacancy rate? People say, I'm really not here, I'm not paying for it. Community would have to stand behind the school district, and yet they have no tax income. Perhaps it could only apply to those areas that do have tax income.
I don't want to dig down too deep here because we need to be out of here. And our meeting has been changed to 10:30, but I want to finish up today. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, we can start talking about some of the details that are related to this, some of the ramifications that may happen. But we all agree that teachers certainly are necessary to have an effect. Teachers are necessary to have some kind of educational system. I offer this amendment to go ahead and make it so that the prime reason, which is to attract teachers, of which we have a very difficult job of doing out in rural Alaska because of the inadequate housing that's out there. That's why I offered the amendment. It's trying to serve the purpose of the bill for rural education.
I understand. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like you to withdraw the amendment for today. I plan on holding this bill and bringing it back on Tuesday. What I'd like you to do, I have a problem with the buy-in part, but I'll set that aside for a moment. What I'd like you to do is to work with Alaska Housing Finance and see if there is a way. The explicit provision that there would be no foundation money used to support the zero down loan. So if there's a way that can pencil out, we'll talk about that on Tuesday. And I'd like to bring it back if that's right with the committee, we'll bring it back Tuesday and we'll dispense with it. But I'll give you the latitude, Senator Olson, to work through this. But I want to make it very clear that no way will foundation money be used to support this type of an effort until the local contribution on behalf of these people is put in place. Is that all right with the committee? Senator Olson, is that all right with you?
That's all right with me. In fact, I was just going to withdraw the amendment.
Okay, well,
I'll make the motion to withdraw the amendment.
Is there objection to withdrawing the amendment? The understanding, Senator Olson will work with those involved, try to work out some sort of a plan, bring it back to me before Tuesday, and we'll see what we can do with the amendment on Tuesday. Anything else on the bill before we set it aside? Senator Green?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as we talked in the Senate test, I have some real concerns about this bill and probably will not be supporting it. And then I want members to understand, I certainly want the public to understand. Although the sponsor statement and the conversation refers to need for teachers and areas that have shortage, this does not require it to be established that an area needs teachers for this to be eligible. There's no location limits. There's no requirement that the person continue teaching. There's no first-time buyer limit. There's no age factor, and there's no upper limit on the price. And my main thing is that this is good for young teachers coming into a community. It's good for young people who have graduated from about tech school, nurses, or a whole raft of other people. If it's good for teachers, it's good for everyone. And I'm very reluctant. Those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Senator Green. Other comments on the bill? We'll hold the bill until Tuesday. Thank you for being here. Brian, you did a great job.
He's brilliant, isn't he?
Brilliant.
He is.
Well, let's move, and our meeting has been changed to 10:30. Let's move to Senate Bill 43. And let's see, whoops. Let's not move to Senate Bill 43. Where'd you go? Let's move to Senate Bill 70, or House Bill 71. House Bill 71 extends the Board of Certified Direct Entry Midwives 4 years, June 30th, 2007, and the extension matches the Division of Audit's recommendation. Pat Davidson is here, if we need her. And with that, could we ask prime sponsor is Representative Bruce Wyrock, and his staff is here to present the bill, if you would, please.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Linda Sylvester. From Juneau. We'll be at it shortly. His hearing is rather fun. Thank you for hearing the bill. This is something that is very special to Representative Wyrock. All of his children were born using the services of a direct entry midwife. Briefly, Kay Connie, who is the president. president of the Midwives Association of Alaska is also here, and she will answer the substantive questions regarding the board itself. And Rick Urien, the director of occupational licensing, is also available, in addition to Pat Davidson. The board has served as a means to make people practicing midwifery aware of the level of experience and education that's expected of them. And the state of Alaska and women seeking an alternative to hospital care for a normal pregnancy and birth rely on the diligence of the board to enhance both the quality and accessibility of their health care. Based on the recommendations of legislative audit, the board is operating well and it should be extended. And the regulation and licensure of direct entry midwives contributes to the protection of the public's welfare. Before I wrap up, I just wanted to say that the board is a small board. The number of midwives is a small number. And this group is very pleased with their board, and they're pleased with their autonomy, and they have no concerns about the high fees that they pay to be licensed because they are a small board. Very clearly known that they wouldn't want to be merged with another board if the concern is because of their fees. It's not a barrier to practice.
Thank you for that presentation. Senator Taylor?
I worked on this when we first passed the concept and brought it into law. I think they've done a great job. I've reviewed the audit report. I moved the bill with individual recommendations.
When you do that, we have a couple of people to testify and also a couple of questions. So if you could hold that off, Senator Taylor. Let's see, Mr. Urien, let's go to you first. If you'd like to provide testimony? Oh, well, then we'll just put you here to respond to questions. Thank you. That was very compelling. All right. Let's see. Kay Kane is with us. Kay, we have some questions of you, please. And is it Kane?
It's Kay Connie.
Kay Connie, thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to respond here today. I would just like to say that I'm the president of the Midwives Association of Alaska. I served on the licensing board from its inception in 1992. For two full terms until I have to resign. I think the licensing board has done an excellent job. I will keep my testimony very short, but I would just like to point out that when we first got our board, the midwives, the certified direct entry midwives in Alaska were doing a very small percentage of the births. And we are now attending almost 10% of the births of babies in Alaska. In some areas, that's much larger. In the Matsu area, it's close to 25% of the babies born in the Matsu borough are delivered by certified direct entry midwives. In Juneau, it's almost 16%, and in Greater it's 20%. So this is pretty phenomenal. And this is with excellent outcomes, very low C-section rates, really good outcomes in the babies. So, and a very low cost to the state. Since 1998, we've been able to receive Medicaid funding for direct entry midwives, and you can only imagine how much money that saves the state every single year to those women that receive the care of the present. So I'm here to answer your questions.
Thank you, Ms. Connie. Senator Olson?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering what the fee was for licensure.
Licensure? Through the chair, Senator Olson, it just went back up to $1,350. Last 2 years ago, it was $950.
It's expensive to have kids.
No, every 2 years.
$1,350.
Every 2 years.
Thank you. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last question I have for you, has there been any actions against some of the licensees?
There was one investigation originally for an unlicensed activity. And then there has been an action, I think, you know, and I'm not going to be perfect with the investigation.
Unlicensed activities, so the person wasn't licensed.
Right, unlicensed activities, and then there was licensed events being investigated.
General?
The last question I have is, if you have I'm not sure if you're going to take action against somebody. You mentioned somebody that doesn't have a license and an action is taken against them. If somebody was, say, have a home birth, I'm going to deliver
on their own asked a friend or an older nutriat to come on over and attend a delivery.
You know, that's typically legal, and our law actually requires discretion for, I can't remember the exact wording, but for, it was put in there, I think, in the original law in 1984 to protect native bucks practicing in the rural areas that, you know, if this is something that's been in their culture for many generations, that they shouldn't have to become licensed in, you know, for this state. This is more directed towards, you know, the modern day economy.
That's what I was kind of heading for, to make sure that the health aides that are out in some of these smaller communities that are free from prosecution.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bundy?
Well, I would observe that I think the difference is that whether you do this on a regular basis for compensation versus somebody who's helping a family friend. These are compensated. Yeah, you're not compensated for the family babies.
Could I refer you to page 11 of the audit, if you have it in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me.
I'll read it to you. The last paragraph, there's a sentence that says, the board believes it is in the profession's and the public's best interest to require all CDM applicants and renewals to pass an exam on state statutes and regulations applicable to the profession. But I don't see that that's part of the renewal. So I ask you, would you like the authority embodied in this renewal to allow you to do that? If you indeed think it's in the public's best interest, would you like us to add this to the renewal?
Chair, I'd like to answer that question with an explanation. First of all, in that this is something that the board does want, and we do want this. It was the consensus of the Midwest Association on the board in the health care conference actually that we were going to do this in a separate way. There's several other housekeeping issues that we need to attend to as well. In order for the board to do certain things, they have to have a board in the statute and a few other things as well. And we thought that we would take the time to work on this and bring it together in another bill. That was our intention. We have no objection to this. I think it's very student exam. It's a very good idea. It's a very short exam. I think it's 8 to 10 questions, helping to exam on the licensure, just to make sure that the parents understand that they don't have to do it. We have no objection to it. It's just a very important to introduce it in the sense.
The purpose of having it outside the Sunset Review would be what?
Just that it wasn't the only quote housekeeping issue that we need to consider. There's a few other issues, and I'm not really prepared at this time. I don't have the list in front of me that River Association is currently working on this list, thinking that, you know, it just be more effective to bring it all together in one bill of housekeeping issues instead of at a time. But we have no objection to the jurisdiction exam whatsoever. We can consider it.
And maybe it's just because I don't understand sunset reviews, but I would think that that's the time that you put all these things together and you bring them forward for scrutiny and for approval. So why don't you work with my staff and let's talk about those things that you do want to bring forward, knowing that we want to get this done by the end of this year. So if you would do that, we'll hold the bill and bring it back when we understand those issues, and we'll try to put them in a time frame that works for you folks. Okay? Anything else of the witness? Senator Taylor, your motion's still on the floor. Okay. So with that, we'll, anything else on House Bill 71? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Connie. Thank you for being here today, too. Okay, we'll set that aside and bring that back following discussion. Now, Senate Bill 43, sponsored by Senator Olson. Senate Bill 43 extends the State Medical Board 8 years to June 30 of 2011. This extension matches the Division of Audit's recommendation. And again, Ms. Davidson is here. And Pat, is there anything you would like to speak with us about with this audit?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pat Davidson with the Division of Legislative Audit. In terms of adding some thoughts to this, our recommendation for an 8-year extension is unusual. However, one of the things that we look at when we do sunset reviews is how well the board is operating, not only in the current sunset period, but prior. What we've seen is this board is working effectively. 8 years ago, the legislature deemed it sufficient to give it an 8-year extension. What we saw was the medical board wasn't waiting for sunsets to come through to move on legislation that they wanted to see happen. They were proactive. For those reasons, we recommended again another 8-year extension for this board.
Thank you, Ms. Davidson. Questions of Pat? Senator Taylor.
How many doctor's licenses is this board doing? And at what level are they doing investigations and that sort of stuff?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Taylor, I can get that information for you. I don't know it off the top of my head. In terms of investigations, the issue that's always a little difficult to answer in sunset reviews is the Division of Occupational Licensing has the investigative staff, and typically the investigative staff are not assigned to any particular board. Therefore, the amount of time spent on investigations for any particular activity is weighed off against the priorities of all the other occupational boards. So it makes it a little difficult for us to try to evaluate investigations solely on the medical board. And so I'm not really in a very good position to answer that question. But I could get the number of licensors, like licensure, revoked, suspension, revocations to you.
I would like to know that. I mean, if I ask that question to the Bar Association, they don't have a good time telling me exactly how many people investigated, exactly how many people disbarred. And I know they have an active and aggressive program involved in my discussion previously with the state medical board has been that they don't pull license. And I'd like to know whether or not he's still off, abiding by that same attitude. I want to know how long and how deep your voice problem is going to ask you.
Ms. Davidson, the question clear? Is it? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Senator Olson?
I'd just like to make a comment quickly that there, I can assure you that there have been licensure action in the recent past. I don't have the numbers either.
Senator Bundy?
Yeah, just that. There's two very high profile cases in the Anchorage Press.
Senator Stevens?
I think the answer to Senator Taylor's question on page 11 of the report, in terms of the number of investigations, number of cases closed, on page 11, that's the 45-month period over the last 3 years.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
413 cases involved.
What, through the chairman, one of the things that makes, you know, just following cases difficult, and where I felt I didn't have the information to answer the senator's question is, there are multiple complaints against one physician. So we were tracking cases, and the senator asked about specific actions.
55 complaints against one physician. I think he's the individual we all know that kept our name out.
Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, if we're finished with that aspect, with the senator's question from Rangel, I think we're going to make it a verbal amendment if I could.
Pat, is there anything else you want to share with us?
Okay.
And we have one other person that wants to testify. Why don't we do that, Senator Olson? Ms. Furian? Morning.
Morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rick Furian. I'm the Director of Occupational Licensing. And, of course, we fully support this bill before you. The medical board has been very busy the last few years, and in answer to the senator's question from Rangel, they do take licenses, and they have a lot of actions pending, a lot of investigations are ongoing. And it is an area of probably the busiest area in within occupational licensing is our investigations dealing with in the field of medicine. And for those, you want to know how many investigators we have that do medical investigations. From an operational point of view, we actually have two. And those two people handle more than 60% of our cases. And we're overloaded. And it's an area that I'm trying to come to grips with as a new person on board. It's something I'm trying to come to grips with this time. And complete the files. That's it. Hearings are held. It's a long period of time. Some is unacceptable, really. But it's not anyone's particular fault. It's just the way the system is bogged down. A lot of the time delays are caused by the licensees, lawyers. They have quite they can delay the process and all that. But we do have some problems here. The medical board has done a very good job with the people that do these are, by the way, a comparison with the Bar Association. I was just in Anchorage last few days. It's funny, the Bar Association has their offices on the same floor as ours, and they have very palatial offices. The people that do the medical investigations would fit in about a size of a quarter of this room and open rooms. They don't even have a closed office room. They have personal conversations or talk about investigations. It's blasted out over the whole building. It's a horrible situation we have in Anchorage. And it's something that, another thing that I need to come to grips with, but we have some problems along those lines.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bundy?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question about what it costs for a midwife's license, what it should cost for a medical, state medical license, and I assume that this cost is based on the earlier directive that the cost of the license equal the cost of the investigations.
That's correct. Through the chair, Senator, I don't have all the fees memorized yet. It's $550, I think it's $500 some odd.
$600
now for doctors. Okay. And it does, the law requires us that fee is based on an average, a two-year average. We have an accounting system that puts it all together, and we divide that by the number of licensees, and that becomes the fee. Incidentally, though, because it has been so active during the last year, that they're way up there, about $190,000 over budget right now, and hopefully that'll average out over the next year, or else they're going to see license fees increase next year to cover these costs.
Senator Bundy? And my follow-up would be, if they're indeed understaffed and don't have adequate facilities, what process would be involved so that you could get more staff, more adequate facilities, or at least pay for
it? Mr. Chair, I'm not sure yet. I think we're maybe too short for this fiscal year, but we definitely need to come in and have a more staff for medical investigations. We have one hearing officer, in the Department of Occupational Licensing who has caseloads. It's just an astronomical amount of caseloads. And the system is bogged down.
Senator Bundy?
I guess where I'm trying to go is we could do that without affecting the general fund. It would simply raise license fees if it was determined that there needed to be increases. Is that correct?
Absolutely, that's correct.
Senator Taylor?
I'm just going to confirm that same fact. They'll have the amount of enforcement that they want to pay for, right?
Mm-hmm. Or that we make them pay for it.
Up to them. It's their profession.
Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually have a verbal amendment to the extension of the medical board. On page 1, line 4, if we could delete the date of 2011 and insert the date 2007 to have a 4-year extension as opposed to an 8-year extension, and I move that amendment.
Jack, for explanation. Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you well know, having been on the medical board for the last number of years, there were some things that I thought there could be an improvement on. One of the situations that we found ourselves many times with the slowdown being bogged down, as was pointed out by Mr. Urien. The locum tenens law was amended so that it would make it somewhat more streamlined to have an increase in the number of doctors come into Alaska, especially now that we have a growing population of physicians that are here now, that we have a better ability to go in and recruit those physicians. And I'd just like to see what the development is after the four-year period. Obviously, it's too short after a one-year period to adequately evaluate that, but after 4 years, I think we'd have a pretty good idea as to whether that should be continued or whether we should also be looking at changing that locum tenens position as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Olson. Mr. Arion, any comment on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, we tend to favor the longer time frame. As you know, the boards are always subject to your evaluation. Every year you come in session, you can always request an audit or do whatever you wish to look at how they're operating, but we tend to favor the longer period of time.
Senator Olson, is your Senator Stevens?
Senator Olson, was it last year that we enacted the local tenants? Didn't we do that last year?
Yes. There have been a number of tweakings that have happened to the medical board, and so because of that, I think it justifies a review after 4 years, and so that's why I move this amendment.
Senator Bundy? Oh, excuse me. Senator Stevens, does that answer your question?
I guess the question is do you think that couldn't we just review the local tenants independently just as we enacted it, or obviously your position is that you'd like to have a four-year review so you could investigate the local tenants and the success of that program?
That is one of the things that needs to be looked at. I think that there are a number of other issues. As has been pointed out by the previous witness, there are situations that need to be looked at. He pointed out that the need for more investigations. If for some reason we do have an increase in accusations or complaints that are out there, that needs to be looked at. I think, though, that and he pointed out correctly that as far behind as we are with the investigations, the hearing officer is the person that is actually overwhelmed because he's hearing multiple cases from multiple boards, and that's where this person, who has to obviously be very careful, the hearing officer is the one that seems to be where the real bottleneck is at.
Just one question: do we have anybody from the current medical board to testify on this?
Senator Bundy?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm inclined to support the amendment. We have a lot of things on our plate every year, and unless there's something that makes this bubble to the top, we may not give it the attention that perhaps it deserves. So this would guarantee that it's going to bubble to the top in 4 years.
My personal feeling is that Senator Olson is part of the profession, and if he thinks this is best for the people of Alaska, I'm going to follow my doctor's advice. So I'd remove my objection to the amendment, but any other discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I can just make a comment. If you were Senator Simpkins, which is your closest, I would tend to agree with you. But I appreciate the consideration anyway.
Senator Stevens, on the amendment?
Clarification. Do we have an official position from the medical board on it? I know we have it from the Department of Licensing and Occupational, but do we have a position on the timeline for extension from the board? Or is this just as a
position
as a former board member?
Mr. Chairman, I did not have anything from the medical board. I know that we're in the process of a transition with board members that are there. And so it's very difficult. There are a number of
That's
people.
Fine. Thank you.
I'm sure as this goes to the other body, if they're not pleased, I'll let the other body know. Other discussion on the amendment to change on line 4, 2001 to 2007. Senator Bundy?
Well, just to add some further incentive, I would say that just in conversations I've had with individual physicians, I think we should bring it back to the top of our attention sooner rather than later.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Other discussion on the amendment? Is there objection to the amendment? Seeing none. Any other amendments to the bill? Seeing none, Senator Taylor?
Move the bill as amended with individual recommendations.
An attached fiscal note.
Yes.
Is there objection to moving the bill? Seeing none, Senate Bill 43 moves as amended with attached fiscal notes. Anything else come before the committee? Our next meeting is tentatively Tuesday. Check your schedule. Anything else, Senator Green?
Okay.
We're adjourned. Thank you.